సహ నో భునక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై సహ నో భునక్తు సహ వీర్యం కరవావహై తేజస్వినావధీతమస్తు మా విద్విషావహై ఓం శాంతి 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 ఓం జయ శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శివ సది గౌర భక్త వృంద హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే 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 రామ 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 హరే హరే.
Okay, so this will be reading the Mahabharata. We'll be reading from the Gangoli translation, which is the largest and most complete of all the translations. But this was translated back in, I think, around 1830. And I don't mean yesterday at 6:30 in the evening. I mean, you know, how you say? How do you say it now? Two centuries ago or something? Huh? Yeah. Like that. So the English is sometimes a little bit stiff. So you'll have to bear with us on that. And then we'll discuss. If there's any questions in between from any of the students, then you just raise your hand. Right? And then we'll go from there. So it starts out the invocation. Om. Having bowed down to Narayana, the most exalted male being, and also to the goddess Saraswati, must the word Jaya be uttered. Here we note that Narayana says the exalted male being. They only count them as one. They're not counted as two. Right? They're not the Narayana Rishis. They're Narayana Rishi. They're one person, but in two forms. Ugrishrava, this is Sutta Goswami. So he's the Mahabharata, just like the Bhagavatam and the other Puranas, are spoken by Sutta Goswami. At Naimisharanya. So basically all the Puranic literature is all spoken at Naimisharanya by Ugrishrava. Ugrishrava, the son of Lomaharshana, surnamed Sauti, well versed in the Puranas, bending with humility, one day approached the great sages of rigid vows, sitting at their ease, who had attended the 12-year sacrifice of Sonaka, surnamed Kulapati, in the forest of Naimisha. Those ascetics, wishing to hear his wonderful narrations, presently began to address him who had thus arrived at the recluse abode of the inhabitants of the forest of Naimisha. Having been entertained with due respect by those holy men, he saluted those Muni sages with joined palms, even all of them, and inquired about the progress of their asceticism. Then all the ascetics being again seated, the son of Lomaharshana humbly occupied the seat that was assigned to him. Seeing that he was comfortably seated and recovering from fatigue, one of the rishis, beginning the conversation, asked him, "Whence comest thou, O lotus-eyed Sauti, and where hast thou spent the time? Tell me who asked thee in detail." Accomplished in speech, Sauti thus questioned, gave in the midst of that big assemblage of contemplative munis a full and proper answer in the words consonant with their mode of life. So we see a lot of etiquette here in this part. Is that Sauti, he is bending with humility. That means That's just his natural state. Because of his great knowledge, because of his great realization, then he is very, very humble. It's just natural, right? It's not that he is, when somebody's there, then he's humble. That's his state no matter if someone's there or not, right? That's the point. Realization means what you do when no one's watching you, right? You might be here at the school, then we do everything nice and all the yes, Moshai, no Moshai, and all the other things that one's supposed to do. And when one gets home, then one argues with one's parents, everybody else, harasses one's, you know, brothers and sisters. That means there's no realization. You've understood, okay, I have to be, these teachers here tell me I should behave like that, so I behave like that. And that's only because I don't get into trouble, right? It's not that I mind bothering them, not that I mind being in trouble, but it's just a botheration. Do we have any cough syrup? Is there any cough medicine? Hey, go with them and take some cough medicine. Does that make sense? So it's just easier. That's the only reason it's being followed. Right? Or it may be by following it, one has gotten some reciprocation. So then one feels they appreciate me because I'm so well behaved and isn't that cool? I'm special. Does that make sense? So these are situations where one's heard the knowledge, but it does not mean that one is following it. Right? You do in the situation where those who have told you do it, but if you're in a situation where they haven't, you don't do it. Right? So that means one hasn't realized it. It hasn't actually become one's own personal value. Does that make sense? But here, Sauti, he's like this all the time. Right? When he's going through the forest. So therefore, when he goes through the forest, the animals aren't disturbed. Right? The animals don't run away, fly away, because there's nothing. He's humble. There's nothing to be disturbed by him. The common person is not disturbed. Right? This is sadhu. This is special. Right? Very different from the modern attitude, right? You have attitude, then you're cool. But the unfortunate thing is, the attitude is all the person with attitude has. Right? As a person, they're nondescript. They're just another face on the street. But because they can talk cool, say a few heavy words, or even a few bad words, then they're considered okay. Right? So it is a culture. You see this culture out on the road here. It's called dogs. Dogs out on the road, who snarls, who shows the biggest teeth, who can cut the biggest profile and be the nastiest, is special. Right? So Sauti is a human, not a dog. So now, the reason we're going through this is the Mahabharata is basically one of the main books that has held the Indian culture together for the last 5,000 years. Because people read this, understand it, and follow it. And then there are those who don't. They like to live like the dogs on the street. So amongst the dogs, dogs don't think we're dogs. They just think we're okay, and everybody else we bark at, right? We walk by, they bark at us, right? Human beings walk by, dogs bark at the human beings. Who's superior, the humans or the dogs? The humans. But the dogs bark anyway. So that's the same way with the people, the cool dudes with attitude. They're just like dogs. They bark at everybody. And they think they're really cool. So that's why Srila Prabhupada made the Vedic educational system to save us from being dogs. Right? Because dogs aren't very special. The only good quality about dogs is their loyalness. And so if you're not even loyal, then you're not worth anything. Right? You're just a piece of garbage that should be thrown away. Does this make sense? Okay. So now Ugrashrava, he was just the opposite. He was very humble, and it showed in his behavior, and then he's bending with this humility like that. Because the heart is bending, the body is bending. Right? This is special. That's why we hear all of the Puranas from him. Right? Someone else is not speaking them. It's always Sauti. Right? Then we see is that he approached the great sages of rigid vows, sitting at their ease. Rigid vows, they're very fixed, but they're sitting at their ease. Right? They're fixed in their vows, but they're not stiff. They're not hard. You know? That doesn't make them tough. They're relaxed. They're natural. They're nice people. So this is also a symptom of one who is actually fixed in one's sadhana. He says, a very nice, pleasant person. Right? He's very rigid and fixed and stiff and not nice and harsh because he's so fixed and everybody else is not. That's not great sages at ease. Does that make sense? Like that. So, then we see in Sonaka, he's the Kulapati. Kulapati means that person who they set the flavor or the mood of the association or the assembly. Right? Means here they're doing a sacrifice, or you have a school, or you have any kind of satsang where a group of persons with a common value system come together. So the person who, sets that mood, or gives the example in that mood, or is the one that keeps everybody fixed in that mood. That's the Kulapati, right? Kula means family, pati means the head of the family, right? It's not a managerial position. It is one illuminates the value system of the group. Does that make sense? Okay, then those ascetics wishing to hear his narrations addressed him, right? And then having been entertained with due respect, according to the position, everybody is to be respected, right? The Vedic principle is respect is there for all living entities. But it may be just very simple, or it may be more elaborate. It's not that, we only recognize senior persons, everybody else we don't. No, we're respectful to everyone, even the ant, right? The ant is walking on the road. It's his right to walk on the road. It's not our right to step on him because we're bigger. Right? Does this make sense? Right? So we even respect the ant. He's walking, we give him his space. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. And then he saluted those sages. And so even though he's being respected, he's respecting them back. The smoke, just make it, let it go up. Or send it this way. Yeah, and so he's asking about their asceticism, right? So sages are doing ascetics. So that is what they're interested in. Right? Otherwise, bring it down there. Oh, so you're okay with it? Okay, then that's okay. So, asceticism is what they're dealing in. So naturally you ask, inquiring that. Right? Let's say you're meeting another person, you are dealing with an individual living entity. Right? This individual living entity has their goals, their values, their endeavors. Does that make sense? So, if we want to have a relationship with them, then we're going to deal with them according to that. Right? So naturally you pick your association according to what is common, right? What is common? So then, in here, then they're sages, so asceticism is value to them. You meet a businessman, you'll ask him, how's his business? Right? You ask an administrator, you ask, you know, is everything peaceful in your, you know, area of management? You know, does that make sense? So, this is relationship. It's based on the other person, right? Relationship doesn't mean I am who I am, everybody has to relate to me. No, that's their duty. My duty is to relate to them. Does this make sense? So this is the thing. The Dharma Shastra will tell you what is the duties. But now, to apply that duty means you have to inquire or be interested in the realm of activity connected with the other person. Does that make sense? Right? Then you have etiquette. So if everybody's doing that, then you'll get your attention also. But you don't worry about your attention, you worry about the other person's attention. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then all the sages, again being seated, the son of Lomaharshana humbly occupied the seat that was assigned to him. He doesn't just sit anywhere. He sits where the seat what they want to give him. Right? They're respecting him. So accordingly, then, out of respect for the others, then he accepts that seat. Does that make sense? He doesn't not accept it. No, they've offered it, so that he accepts it. So that's the nice thing here. Then, and recovered from fatigue. So this would mean that he has come, he has been received, and whatever is needed, depending upon, you know, his coming, the time required to be comfortable after that. Does that make sense? It's not immediately as soon as he comes, then immediately then he's sitting and giving a class. Right? This is important. Right? You're going to, means you all will grow up. You're going to be doing things. You're going to be in charge of things. You're going to be managing things. So, and you're going to have senior devotees come to your place. So does that mean after they've gotten off the airplane from a 17-hour drive, then drove in, you know, an hour from the airport to the temple, that they're supposed to walk into the temple, sit down and give a class? According to this, no. According to this, you receive them. Everyone says, you know, Hari Bol. And then depending upon what it is, then they get to go to some place and refresh themselves. Right? So then you can greet them when they come in, do a kirtan, you know, Hari Bol, offer obeisances, smile, a few exchanges. And then depending upon what was their situation in coming, then give some space. Right? If they've just come from somewhere else close by, then they just come in and, yes, sit down and give the class, unless they want to use the bathroom or, you know, something. Right? But if it's a long journey, then you receive them, then they get proper rest, they have their bath, they take something to eat, like this. Then you set a time when they will then be met. You know, then everyone can get together and have something. Does this make sense? Right? This is the human element. Right? If you follow this, you'll find that your senior men won't be in the hospital so much of the time. Right? We're saying this, but I'm speaking from reality. Because it doesn't work like that. The person has just got out of the hospital from recovering from the last, you know, state of 5 programs a day, and immediately, what do the managers of his zone arrange? 5 more meetings a day. Oh, Guru Maharaj is healthy again. So now again, though they don't think, well, maybe 5 is too much. Maybe 3 programs a day would be better. And then he doesn't have to spend a month in the hospital. Does this make sense? Right? So this is something you're all going to have to work with, because when you grow up, the senior men are going to be old enough to be hospitalized if you don't consider all these things. Right? That makes sense? Okay. then they'd ask where he came from and how he spent his time. Right? So then some concern about him. Right? They may have their questions, but first they find out how the other person's doing. Right? They don't just immediately jump into. Does that make sense? And then he gave a full and proper answer, right? Not just something here and there, just superficial, but serious. But here, what's important is according, consonant with their mode of life. In other words, you give someone an answer to a question that actually fits their lifestyle. Does that make sense? Like you're talking with a brahmachari, then you will give an answer to a question. It means, let's say we take the same question that is good for how he would apply it and use it in the brahmachari ashram. A grihasta, you would apply it that way, right? You know, men you would answer in one way, women in another way. Does this make sense? Even though it's the same question. So that's very important, because here again we see you're taking into consideration the individual and the relationship with the individual. Does this make sense? This is the theme that comes up again and again and again that is trying to be established, is that the living entities in the spiritual world naturally have a very nice relationship with Godhead and all the devotees that are there. Right? Coming to the material world, we think we are God, so we try to artificially make ourselves the center of attention, the center of everything. So then what happens is, because we're so, each one is so busy trying to make themselves the center, then there's no real proper interaction in the material world, on the material platform. Right? What little bit is there is only because there's something that I need from the other person. Therefore, I will deal nicely in such a way, even though it appears I'm not the center, but the reason I'm dealing nicely is to get my own work done. That's all. Does that make sense? That's why the material etiquette is so artificial. Necessary, but artificial, right? Etiquette is necessary, whether it's superficial or it has substance. Etiquette has to be followed, right? Just because it's superficial doesn't mean it's thrown out, right? Isn't it? Just like you have to eat. Okay, you go and look in the basket. There's a bad potato. So then you throw out that potato because it's bad and then don't eat potatoes? No. Then you look and pick up the next one that is good. Does that make sense? Many people make this mistake, because it's artificial, I throw it out. No. Just because it's superficial doesn't mean it's not to be followed. That make it real. Give it some substance. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Okay. This is the first section. So you'll find there'll be a lot more explanation. As we go, it'll be more and more storyline. So don't worry. No one has to worry they're going to get bored here. But there's a lot, in the opening, there's a lot of things that set the scene, and so there'll be many explanations. Yes?
There was another point.
Loudly.
He made... Who is speaking this?
The Rishi Shonaka is speaking to Saudi.
They asked this Sruta Goswami, that how he was feeling, where he been, and how he was feeling over there.
Mm-hmm.
It means generally he will say other, basically his opinion, what he was feeling. So then from that they can reflect also how they should deal with him. For example, he said that I was very disturbed over there because something of such and such was wrong. So then they make sure that thing will be not wrong this place. So we know that nobody will disturb from that. Or he liked something very much on that place. So then they will make sure that thing happen again here also.
Mm.
So like they can.
Yeah, that's good. Could you hear? So he was making the point, as we were saying, that he was doing things in connection with the sages at Naimisha there. So, but at the same time as they were asking him, then where did he come from? How did he spend his time? Right? So that means they will also find out from him what are his values and what is his perception on things. Right? Then based on that, then they will know also how to deal, ask questions, interact. Does that make sense? So both ways it will work. Does this make sense? Right? So this is etiquette. Each side is doing the proper interaction with the other person. And that way you get taken care of, right? So instead of trying to take care of yourself, you take care of others. They'll take care of you. Does that make sense? So that's the position. Okay. So continuing. Sauti said, having heard the diverse sacred and wonderful stories which were composed in his Mahabharata by Krishna Dwaipayana, and which were recited in full by Vaishampayana at the snake sacrifice of the high-souled royal sage Janamejaya, and in the presence also of that chief of princes, the son of Parikit, and having wandered about, visiting many sacred waters and holy shrines, I journeyed to the country venerated by the Dwijas, twice born, called Samantapanchaka, where formerly was fought the battle between the children of Kuru and Pandu, and all the chiefs of the land ranged on either side. Samantapanchaka is Kurukshetra. Right? There's five lakes there, so that's the Panchaka. When Parasuram killed all the Kshatriyas 21 times, it means 21 generations, so that's over a few hundred years there. Then he collected all the blood into these five big lakes there. So that place is special, that's Kurukshetra. Thence, anxious to see you, I am come into your presence, ye reverend sages, all of whom are to me as Brahma. Ye greatly blessed who shine in this place of sacrifice with the splendor of the solar fire. Ye who have concluded the silent meditations and have fed the holy fire, and yet who are sitting without care, what, O ye Dwijas, twice born, shall I repeat? Shall I recount the sacred stories collected in the Puranas, containing precepts of religious duty and of worldly profit, or the acts of illustrious saints and sovereigns of mankind? Right, so journeying around, he went to the snake sacrifice of Maharaj Janamejaya. And there was spoken the Mahabharata. Right? Because whenever you do a sacrifice, then in between the yajnas, then you have something being discussed. Right? Some spiritual subject matter, some interaction between the sages and that. Because that then gives it some real meaning. Because the ritual itself is important, but more important than the ritual is discussion about the Supreme Lord, right? Ritual is simply an external application of that interaction, right? You're paying attention? You do know that you guys will be, means I'm just speaking here, but in your, you know, in another class in English or something else, you will be tested on what's going on here, right? So this isn't something you just sit here, pay attention maybe, sleep maybe, or do something else maybe, is that at the end of the week, after the 4 days class, then there'll be some, you'll have to do some writing on this, okay? So it's worth your while to pay attention. Yeah? Okay? So now he sees these sages like Brahman. And he mentions here is that in the place of sacrifice with the splendor of the solar fire, right? Solar fire that is the sun. So they chant the Brahma Gayatri. That's their japa. So from chanting this, then they come to the Brahman platform. Right? That's what the Brahma Gayatri is for, is to bring one to the Brahman platform. Right? So therefore he's appreciating that. Plus, then they are performing the sacrifice. So in this time they were doing this, right? Now we chant Hare Krishna. That's our mantra. So he's appreciating the purity and the potency coming from the particular sadhana of that particular group of persons, right? So devotees have their sadhana given by the Shastra. These sages have another set of sadhana. But it's all given by the scriptures. Does that make sense? Okay, and who are sitting without care. That doesn't mean they're wastrels, right? That have nothing to do. They have no care because they have no material investment. Right? If you've invested your energy and values in the material energy, then you have a care, right? You're worried about losing your house, your money, your family, your this, your that, right? But they don't have that. So there's no care. They're free. They're independent. That's real independence. Right? Know that. Right? It's many times thought, you know, being a student, you're not independent. You have to do what everybody else says. But if you look at it, it depends how you define independence. Right? Now, I have a group, the teachers tell me what to do. I'm in the house, my parents tell me what to do. So, I'm not independent. But if I get out of that, I'm out of the school, I'm out of the house, then I'll be independent, I can do what I want. But then you're going to connect yourself with the material energy, because right now somebody else is worrying about the material energy for you, right? Where all your things come from, your facility, your food, everything, that's coming from someone else. They're arranging it, right? So that means then you have to start doing that. So now if you look at it, okay, no one's telling you what to do, seemingly, but now you're bound up by all that material endeavor. And if you want to maintain relationships, you have to reciprocate. You have to respond. You can't just do what you want. Right? Therefore, you're not independent. Your independence actually is less. But because of false ego, then we think it's more. So one should take advantage of student life and get the maximum out of it while you're still independent, before you become completely dependent and controlled by others. Does that make sense? Because once you're controlled, you're locked in. And then that's what you're going to be doing for the next 20, 30 years. Right? So, while you're independent, you should be trained, you should be intelligent, and you should therefore pick a very appropriate situation that you're going to be locked into and dependent upon. Does that make sense? Because if not, you make the wrong decision. That wrong decision is going to affect you for the next 20, 30 years. And if you made the wrong decision, it's going to affect you for about probably 40 or 50 years. Right? And if you make the right decision, it'll affect you for 20, 30 years. Does this make sense? Because if one is materially needy, then one has to fulfill one's material desires. And if you don't know what you're doing and you do it wrong, then you're going to be doing it a long time. Right? If you know how to cook, you know how to prepare what's available, then you can eat very quickly. But if you don't know how to cook, don't know how to use the ingredients, and you're running all over trying to get this and that, you try to cook, you burn it, you do this, you do that, and at the end it's not very palatable anyway. You spent 2 to 3 times longer, and it wasn't that good. Right? That's because we're playing around when it's time to learn how to cook. And don't care, because what do I care? You know, after I finish here, I'll go home, and my mommy's going to make something fabulous for me, because she loves me. Yeah, while you're still small and cute. When you get big, you're going to have to go out there and make the money to pay for what mommy's cooking. Does that make sense? So the point is, you know how to cook now, then later on, you don't go hungry. Right? Does that make sense? So this goes for everything. You know how to serve means when you get bigger, people are going to like having you around because you're not a lazy bum. Right? No one likes lazy bums. Not even your mother, believe it or not. Right? So, therefore, this is the time to take advantage and become expert. Right? Become serious. Become good at doing things. Right? Then when you grow up, then you're a valuable member of the Vaishnav community. Because you can do something. You can lead. Right? You're not just waiting around for someone else to pick up your socks and feed you. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah? Yes.
This, when we are students, people telling us what to do. Uh-huh. Later when we graduate, basically, or after student life is over, then we have to tell ourselves what to do.
Yeah.
Not that people will come to us and tell us, we have to tell ourselves, we have to be self-inspired, and we have to know what to tell to ourselves.
Yeah. Does that make sense? He's saying is that when one is studying, then one is being told what to do, because you're being trained. But once you grow up, then you have to tell yourself what to do. Right? Otherwise, someone else will tell you what to do. Anyway. So that's your choice. You know? You know what to do, and you do it. Or, just like when you're younger, they'll still be telling you what to do. Okay? That makes sense? Okay. So now, moving on. Oh, so now we ask what to discuss. Now here are topics. Stories recollected in the Puranas containing religious and religious duty, worldly profit. Right? In other words, of Dharma and Artha. Or the acts of illustrious saints and sovereigns of mankind. Right? So, in other words, you're getting your general religious concepts or the example of great personalities, right? Because this is where it all comes from. Here you notice it doesn't... These are sages that are interested in liberation, right? And so he doesn't mention there... Excuse me. He doesn't mention there kama or moksha, right? Because those going for moksha... Kama is not their interest. And because moksha is their interest, it's automatic. You don't have to mention it. Right? Because he said he's going to give the answer according to the persons that are there. Right? Does that make sense? So now it was a matter of, are we getting stories of religion? Right? Or are we getting stories of the individuals? Right? In other words, is it a Purana? Or is it an itihas? Right? Purana means as general, means all different kings and all different great personalities. Or itihas means it's specific. Does that make sense? Right? So that's the point. But it will always be based around people. Right? That's the element. Because the people do the activity, the people give the example. The people are who were people, so then we follow people. Yeah? The Rishi replied. So the Rishi means Sonaka Rishi, right? Because he's the Kulapati. So the Kulapati, he does the asking the questions. Yeah. The Rishi replied, the Puranas, first promulgated by the great Rishi Dvaipayana, and which after having been heard both by the gods and the Brahmarshis, was highly esteemed, being the most eminent narrative that exists, diversified both in diction and division, possessing subtle meanings logically combined and gleaned from the Vedas. It is a sacred work, composed in elegant language. It includeth the subjects of other books. It is elucidated by other shastras, and comprehendeth the sense of the four Vedas. We are desirous of hearing that history, also called Bharata, the holy composition of the wonderful Vyas, which dispelleth the fear of evil, just as it was cheerfully recited by the Rishi Vaishampayana under the direction of Dwaipayana himself at the snake sacrifice of Raja Janamejaya. So he's saying that the Puranas then give the most vast amounts of knowledge that's taken from the essence of the Vedas, right? Does that make sense? By all that, so then by the Puranas you'll get the most things. Other aspects you get a particular skill specifically, but the Puranas teach you the whole broad range of this knowledge that you can practically apply because it's done through people, right? How they're doing it, right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, you study something, let's say astrology. So that's just the science of astrology. But the Purana will teach you about people who are astrologers, how they lived and how they worked. Right? So the science is important. You study that. Because that you can get from a teacher who knows that science. But how to live that life of an astrologer, that we need to hear from those who understand what life is. Does that make sense? Yeah? Yeah. So that's why then the Puranas become very special. That's why they're the prominent. And Bhagavatam, the topmost literature, is a Purana. Now here also they mention that Bharata. So that means the Mahabharata. It's the Purana is the Bharata, but because it's so big, it's called Maha, right? So you get Mahabharata. But it's also, we'll see through here, much of the time just referred to as Bharata. So it's the same thing. So Bharata means the history of basically Bharatvarsha, or those who follow the Vedic culture. And because they're following, they're actually connected to the whole universe. So when you study Bharata, you actually study the universe. Does that make sense? Because that's what they're connected to. Okay? Sauti then said, having bowed down to the primordial beings, Ishan, to whose multitudes makes offerings, and who is adored by the multitude. Ishan means the Supreme Lord. Isha, yes.
Between Purana and Mahapurana.
Purana is a general category. It means it deals with five subjects. It deals with the primary creation, in other words, the expansion of the universal form of the Lord, how He expands into everything, right? It means how God has expanded into the material energy to make all the varieties of forms and activities and feelings and anything else that there is that we can perceive and experience in the material energy, how God has entered into all that. That's the primary creation. Right? Then the secondary creation is the second topic, which means now how Brahma externally manifests that as the gross material forms. Does that make sense? Just like God has already created the mentality and concept of the dog, right? Then Brahma, then in his creation, the form of a dog becomes manifest, and there's, walking around the street sniffing and barking, right? So, but the dog is just a combination of the material elements. Right? Earth, water, fire, air, ether, right? And put together in a certain way that is appropriate for the behavior of a dog. Right? Wanting to bark and growl at people and, claim that this is my area
would be, you know, harder in, like, as a tree. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the form of somebody thinking, this is my place, I'm in charge of it, anybody comes here, they're going to get into trouble. Right? And their, let's say, their personal hygiene and behavior is not very refined. That's called a dog. Right? So that form that Krishna is given for it is the perfect form for it. Does that make sense? So like that, then Krishna has done that for every species of life. It has a set specific mentality, and then there's a natural form for that mentality. So that's Krishna's creation. Manifesting it so that we can see it, that's Brahma's creation. Then the third thing is that manifestation is done through the Prajapatis. Right? There's 21 Prajapatis in the universe, and from them all the 88,400,000 species of life manifest. Right? So that means you have, they're all human beings, but that means some mother, you know, ends up with, you know, snakes for children, or chickens, or platypuses, or, you know, you name it, like that. But because, you know, they're her kids, and, you know, she loves them, right? You know, like that. Does that make sense? Like that. You know, so that's why there must be something cute in everything, right? Because somebody loves them, right? Okay? So that's the third. Then the fourth is the Manus. Because of all the 8,400,000 species of life, the human species is most important. Because that's the species through which you can actually understand who you are and go back to Godhead. Right? So that, then, is managed by the Manus. Because the Manu establishes what is the proper culture and etiquette for human beings so that they can progress. Right? That's the Dharma Shastra. So that's what they are in charge of. Right? And so, then, them being in charge of this, how they do that and what's special about their managing the human beings so that they can uplift themselves, that is important. Right? So that's the fourth topic. The fifth topic, then, is the kings who do basically the day-to-day management of the human society so that it's progressive. Right? So now you've gotten the full range from God down to what goes on today. So that's history. Okay? So every Purana has to have those five. Otherwise, it's not a Purana. Just like a poem is supposed to rhyme, right? Then you call it a poem. If it doesn't rhyme, right, generally it's not a poem. You don't say it's poetry, right? There may be exceptions, but, you know, that's... Does that make sense? Now, a Mahapurana means besides this, then there are more topics, right? That basically are dealing more specifically with Godhead, with how He maintains the creation, how He protects the creation. Those are the only ones I remember. But there's five. Okay? So it has those five, then it's called a Mahapurana. Okay? But if it only has those five, that's a Purana. That's the literature is Purana, then Maha means it's on top of that. Okay? Okay. Okay, so then we're worshiping. That, now he starts with Ishan, with the Supreme Lord, right? And then from there he'll come down. Ishan, who is the true incorruptible one, Brahma, perceptible, imperceptible, eternal, who is both a non-existing and existing non-existing being, who is the universe and who is also distinct from the existing and non-existing universe, who is the creator of high and low, the ancient, exalted, inexhaustible one, who is Vishnu, beneficent, and the beneficence itself worthy of all preference, pure and immaculate, who is Hari, the ruler of the faculties, the guide of all things movable and immovable. I will declare the sacred thoughts of the illustrious sage Vyas, of marvelous deeds, and worshipped here by all. So here he's saying about the Lord being existing and non-existing. Existing means it's eternal. Non-existing means what is temporary. So here what he's saying, he's both the existing, non-existing means he's not here. He's in the spiritual world, so we can't see him, so to us he doesn't exist. And he's also the supreme existing, non-existing living entity, meaning he's here where we can see him in his pastimes, but still he's eternal, he's not material. Does that make sense? And he's perfect, everything he does is perfect, he maintains everyone, he gives all the faculties, means your ability to see, smell, touch, taste, all that, that is also given by him. He's controlling all that. So because he sees, we see. He's sleeping, then we're not seeing. We'll be asleep. Does that make sense? So now he moves on about now the book, how Vyasa is written. Some bards. Bards are those who recite histories and stories, in a very poetic, entertaining way. Some bards have already published this history. Some are now teaching it, and others, in like manner, will hereafter promulgate it upon the earth. It is a great source of knowledge, established throughout the three regions of the world. It is possessed by the twice-born in detailed and compendious forms. It is the delight of the learned for being embellished with elegant expressions, conversations human and divine, and a variety of poetic measures. So he's saying some have already spoken it, some are speaking it now, and some will be speaking it in the future. Right? This Mahabharata. And it is a great source of knowledge, means whatever is there in the three worlds, that knowledge is here. Right? So it's very special. And it contains discussions both of human nature and of the spiritual and of the heavenly. Right? So it contains everything. So there's nothing that's left out in this particular literature. And it's a delight for the learned because it's done in a very poetic way. You can see the language that's there. It's not just, one day, this guy, Sutta, he happened to be walking along and he bumped into these sages at, Naimisha, who were doing a 12-year sacrifice, and they said, yeah, hey dude, what's going on? What's happening? Right? And then he says, well, hey, I just came from this really far out snake sacrifice and that. You guys want to hear about it? Cool. And then they started talking. Right? So we can see that, of course, maybe if we spoke it in that way, everybody would understand it more. But this is for educated people, right? And this is the literature that is famous for being liked by women Shudras and friends of the twice born, right? And this is so nicely done, right? So, yeah. And also it says in detailed and compendious. So it has forms of the next chapter will give summary of the whole book. Even in this chapter, we'll get a summary of the whole book. The whole Mahabharata will be explained by Dhritarashtra later in how he understood he was going to be defeated. He'll give all the examples throughout history for that, and it actually, in essence, gives the whole Mahabharata. And at the same time as detailed, each of those stories that he mentions, they'll have many, many padas or many, many parvas that explain it. Okay.
In this world, when it was destitute of brightness and light, and enveloped all around in total darkness, there came into being, as the primal cause of creation, a mighty egg, the one inexhaustible seed of all created beings. It is called Mahadivya, and was formed at the beginning of the Yuga, in which, we are told, was the true light, Brahman, the Eternal One, the wonderful and inconceivable being present alike in all places, the invisible and subtle cause whose nature partaketh of entity and non-entity. From this egg came out the Lord Pitamaha Brahma, the one and only Prajapati. Right? So we're talking about creation. We've heard about it. You have Mahavishnu. From Mahavishnu comes these like golden eggs that come out of his pores, and they sit on the causal ocean. And from that, then the creation happens. So this is going into it in very slight, because you see all literature starts with that, because that's where it starts, is from God, and then comes down to the creation. Because if you know how you connect, then you know how to function, right? You know who you are, then you know how, what's your relationship with something. Then Pitamaha, the one Prajapati, with Suraguru and Stanu. So then this will be, Stanu will be the elements of, you have Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, right? So Stanu, he's the one that's in this corner, right? In the southwest, that's Stanu. It's a form of Shiva, right? So he's the controller. And this side is Shiva, and this side is another form of Shiva. So the influence and the control, because the whole material energy is based on ignorance, right? So that ignorance is controlled by Shiva. So the influence of what's happening, the control of what's happening, it's all under his jurisdiction. Does that make sense? Okay. Then appeared the 21 Prajapatis, namely, okay, you're going to get all 21. Manu, Vashishta, and Parameshti, 10 Prachetas, Daksha, and the 7 sons of Daksha. Okay, well that's easy enough. Right, because there's 10 Prajetas and 7 sons of Daksha, so that's 17 right there. Then Daksha himself, 18, Parameshti, 19. Then we have Vishishta, 20, and Manu, 21. Easy enough. Then appeared the man of inconceivable nature, whom all the rishis known also, and so, whom all the rishis know, and so the Vishwadevas, the Adityas, the Vasus, and the twin Ashvinis, the Yakshas, the Sadhyas, the Pisachas, the Guhyakas, and Pitris. After these were produced the wise and most holy Brahmarshis, and the numerous Rajarshis, distinguished by every notable quality. So the water, the heavens, the earth, the air, the sky, the points of the heavens, the years, the seasons, the months, the fortnights, called Pakshas, were day and night in due succession, and thus were produced all things that are known to mankind. Right? That makes sense. Right? Everything that is there, then has been produced. He started with the primordial egg, then Brahma, then the Prajapatis, then all the main, leaders of the universe, then everything in the universe, right? All the directions and all the different kinds of things. Then all the different times, everything, and all the living entities. And what is seen in the universe, whether animate or inanimate, of created things, will at the end of the world and after the expiration of the Yuga be again confounded, means destroyed. And at the commencement of other Yugas, all things will be renovated. And like the various fruits of the earth, succeed each other in due order of their seasons, thus continueth perpetually to revolve in the world without beginning and without end, this wheel which causeth the destruction of all things. Right, so time, everything's created, everything's destroyed. Does that make sense? So now he's come through in this basically two paragraphs. He's given a summary of the complete creation. Right? So that's very well done. So now, today's Thursday. Yeah, tomorrow then we'll continue, where he starts to now discuss the actual
how you say, storyline of the Mahabharata, like that. So we'll continue then.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.